Wally, I think clearly that the cautious option is to do exactly as you said, to go back, shut down, get on the phone and arrange for help to come. But, you know, let's put ourselves in the situation that these folks are in. And don't you think we might seriously look at some of the other options a long time before we actually do this one?
Bob, yes, I agree. I'm realistic enough to know that not everybody is going to park the plane, call the shop, and get the maintenance guy up there. There's a real temptation in this case to just hope everything's going to be okay and get going. You've got your people loaded, the airplane is running, everything seems normal now. And I think there's a reasonable amount of number of pilots that would just say, I'm going to get my IFR clearance and go IFR.
I mean, quite frankly, we've been there. We're ready to go home. There's nothing at this location that is going to improve our situation. There is nothing at this situation that's going to help us out. So moving on versus staying still, I think, is going to be a strong, strong draw. What are some of the pressures that might lead us towards one of the other options? And I think all the options are in play because, quite frankly, right now it looks like things are working normal. So picking up your IFR clearance and getting on home, I think, is going to be a draw. We have to be real, and folks will look at that. Taking off and pressing down the road VFR is not inherently dangerous. Bob, would you maybe go for that option?
I might go for that option, Bob. I'd be a little bit more conservative than launching with an IFR clearance. Potentially, there's something wrong with this airplane, but there are two airports that are within 15 to 20 minutes flight from the departure airport. I look at the weather, and being as it is here, it will be legal VFR to follow the highway down to one of those two airports. Probably Hibbing, because it offers major airframe power plant repairs, which would indicate it's probably got a bigger shop than Eveleth, which has only minor airframe and power plant repairs. But with the ceiling being forecasted to be maybe 1,000 feet, maybe 1,200 feet, I would get AWOS reports at the two adjoining airports, one east and one west of the departure point, and get an idea what those reports said, as well as potential destinations such as Hibbing and Eveleth. And it's completely legal to fly in uncontrolled airspace 1 mile clear of clouds. And the majority of that trip to one of those two airports would be in uncontrolled airspace. I probably would leave the gear down. Doesn't really make a difference on a short flight of that sort. But being that the system is now online, and if it continued to be online through the takeoff, I would continue en route VFR, get the airplane thoroughly checked out, or get a new battery, whatever the requirement was to bring it up to 100%. But I don't see any reason why you couldn't go VFR. On the other hand, if the system kicked off before takeoff or shortly after takeoff, well, no point in continuing. But we also have a VOR on the field at Eveleth, which could be of some value. And I don't see a real big problem following the secondary road down to the interstate and continuing from there.
John, would you consider a VFR flight over 25 to 30 miles unsafe or maybe just not normal? How would you?
I got to tell you about this. Is one of the most difficult that I've seen so far. It's a tough choice. It's a very tough choice. I would be sorely tempted to do the VFR trip down to one of the two airports, as Bob said. But it would also be one of those things that halfway through the trip, I'd be sitting there looking at the weather, trying to dodge a rain shower, going, "This is stupid. This is really stupid," and probably landing and going, "That was one of the dumbest things I ever did in an airplane. Yeah, I made it here, but I scared myself, I scared my passengers, and for what?" I probably would try it and regret it.
I hear you loud and clear. But you're going to sit there, you know, and there's the scale, okay? And there you are, you know, trying to balance this thing out. But you're at a remote location. You may or may not be able to talk this guy into leaving his maintenance shop to come over to your remote location. And is he going to drop everything and do it now? Or is he going to say, "I might see you in a couple hours, and I might be able to do something to help you get out of there."
Or he might be there tomorrow. Or
so, yeah. While option four, calling and having the maintenance guy come to you, is the prudent option, it's just loaded with problems and issues that may cause us to disdain that issue. Wally?
Okay, well, yeah. More problems with option four, staying, calling the guy to come to look at us. But let's look at the risk of the two options. You might be able to make it VFR, and yes, you might be in some rain showers, and you might wish you hadn't done it even after you've done it. But if we look at the risk involved in the VFR flight versus the risk involved in calling this guy to come get us, there's no risk in that decision. There is risk in the VFR flight. Now, I guess we can say anytime we take off, there's a certain amount of risk. But I realize my choice is the ideal choice. I'm not stuck in Minnesota right now needing to get home with a broken airplane. So it's pretty easy to make sitting here. I think a lot of people would make that VFR choice.
Well, right now we don't have a broken airplane.
We don't know.
We can't say that we have a broken airplane at this point.
We got an airplane that my comfort level is pretty low in right now.
But it appears normal. I mean, the last indication was
You know, airplanes, like any other mechanical device, cars, boats, whatever, they don't break for no reason. There's something going on here. It may be just as simple as a minor maintenance thing, but there's just too many unknowns to Certainly to go IFR. We all realize that we can't go IFR.
Worst choice, so,
yeah. Or that just wouldn't be prudent at all. But is there enough latitude in this situation that we could attempt a short VFR flight? If the weather was clear in a million to get down to Eveleth, I think it would be pretty much a no-brainer. We could all do that. But now you're taking an unknown in the airplane and an unknown in the weather. You've got 25 or 30 miles there, and you only know the weather where you're standing right now. There's no observation. You know the weather 5 miles around the other airport because that's all the ASOS is. There's 25 miles of unknown in between there. The unknowns are just starting to pile up.
Yep. We've got showers in the vicinity in the area forecast, so we're very likely to encounter a shower or two en route, which could push us off the highway that we were following.
And, well, there's showers and then there's showers.
Yeah.
We're talking about potentially showers, I think, in the area forecast to bring the visibility down to 2 miles.
Correct.
That's not all that bad if you're 1,000 feet above ground and you're following a highway. It's not heavy rain. It's not going to obscure visibility all that much. It's going to reduce it. And, of course, you have the option of making a 180 and heading back to Tower Airport along the road. The road runs both ways. So it's not totally without options here. We're talking about a 15 or 20-minute flight.
And quite frankly, I mean, let's be real here. The pressures, you're sitting there on the ground. Nobody's hurt. You know, everything is real good, except that you're in Never Never Land. Everybody's ready to move on, including you. And there's nothing there. And just 20 minutes away, 20 short minutes away, all your problems can be removed. Can be resolved. Is this 20-minute flight unsafe? Bob is suggesting that by leaving yourself outs, by leaving yourself options, you're not doing anything illegal or inappropriate. Is it unsafe, unwise, or maybe just not the best choice?
Well, Wally would suggest it's not the best choice. He may be right, but my thinking would be it's worth a look-see. The airplane is operating normally at this point. If the alternator were to fail after takeoff, you could return. If it were to fail halfway through the route, you could shut the master off, conserve what power you got. I would also leave the gear down and not even deal with that issue of emergency gear extension.
Let me ask you this. Would any of you depart home station with this condition?
Of course not.
Why would we be having the same discussion on the road?
Because we have all of these pressures. We got these friends of ours in the back seat that want to get going.
Yep.
We've already gone back and unloaded them once, and now who's going to tell them we got to do this again? They're not going to like that. And you're expected home. You've got other things to do.
You don't have any other easy way of getting home either. There's no rental cars there. There's no airline bus. So what, are you going to take a bus? You've got that pressure now too. Maybe pressures from some locals even standing around looking at you like, what are you thinking here?
Well, I think we've talked about it in other scenarios, too. I mean, doesn't it bring in some additional planning factors when you go to a remote location?
And what kind of support? And your
failure to do that has set you up, has it not? I mean, once again, who is the enemy? Well, look in the mirror. Okay, you've set yourself up. But one of the things I think we really have to look at here, sure, the airplane appears normal right now, but we have an unknown situation, do we not? We had battery, we had an alternator that was not operating normally. What else is going on in this airplane? It's a new airplane to us. Mm-hmm. Might these unknowns just be a huge factor that we have to weigh and give appropriate consideration to before we think about taking this unknown situation and taking it airborne?
Exactly, Bob. We have two known situations, the battery and the alternator, but as you point out, there may be even more situations.
What caused the initial problem?
And in my experience, airplanes don't usually fix themselves by flying them.
John, you talked about you could have helped yourself out by discovering this problem before you started up and were already down the road a little bit, which just kind of adds additional pressure. How about the pre-flight?
Absolutely. The pre-flight, regardless of whatever airplane it is, somewhere during the pre-flight, you're going to check something electrically. You're going to lower the flaps. You're going to check the pitot heat, check some enunciators or something like that. That would have clued you right off the top that the battery was dead. And that perhaps something was going on there. And knowing the characteristics of the airplane, were you really watching the alternator and voltmeter when on your way up? Maybe we're down 2 or 3 tenths of a volt from where we normally should be. You don't really have any history pattern with this, but there's other things that could have given us a clue earlier on in this process that something was going on.
You lead us into another very, very important area, and that's systems knowledge.
Exactly.
We have a new airplane to us, which obviously create some degree of unfamiliarity, but even with an airplane you've had a while, a lot of pilots just do not fully understand the systems in their airplane. And especially when you're trying to troubleshoot and communicate to others that might not be on location what's going on with your airplane, how important is systems knowledge, Wally, in the scope of this scenario that we're in right now?
Absolutely. You need to understand what risks you might have, and not only for your own safety to make a good decision, but to explain it to the maintenance technician so that he or she can diagnose your problem if you get to that point. So no question.
And the system knowledge also that this is kind of an abnormal situation where we're doing a external auxiliary power start. Did we even do that correctly, putting the jumper cables in the port? Every airplane is different. Some of the master switch is on, some it's off, some of the alternator switch. Did we fry our alternator just by doing the process incorrectly?
Good opportunity to do damage if you don't follow the procedure. That's
right,
correct.
Right.
And how important wouldn't it be in this situation to sit there and play a good solid game of what if? Before you decided to take off, what if an additional electrical problem appears? What if we encounter the rain showers? I think by weighing some of the possible things that could occur when you take off, and not all of these are unrealistic. We know the weather's out there. We know we have some unknown mechanical situations. I think the what if process, I think, will really help us arrive at the decision we need to make here.
That's called good risk assessment and risk management, right?
As opposed to 2020 hindsight.
Or just saying, I hope it works out.
And as you said, Bob, you're looking at those are making plan Bs, plan Cs. And if you can't make a plan B or a plan C or whatever that has some reasonable expectation of success, maybe plan A was flawed.
We've had 10 or 15 minutes to discuss this now and look at all the points we've brought up. Imagine how difficult it is and what pressure that puts on that pilot in that spot.
By himself out on the ramp. Really, he's the only aeronautical resource that he has.
But the good news is right now your problems are on the ground. Do you really want to take your problems in the air?
Yeah.